The commentator Geoffrey Peel and Eamon McCann with us this morning. Morning to you, Geoffrey.
Good morning, Stephen.
Morning
Welcome
to
back.
You. Good morning. Thank you. Eamon, morning to you.
Good morning.
What do you read into this, Eamon? Set this out for us.
Well, in general terms, the first thing I'd say is that Professor Everson has done a good job with poor material, if I can put it like that. I mean, the overall idea we were given to understand was that she'd been asked to come up with a scheme which would ensure that nobody currently in receipt of benefits were going to lose out under the welfare reform proposals. Now, the working group under Professor Everson has at least been honest, where many politicians have not. She said, well, there's only enough money to provide top-up payments when they go for, as far as the majority of those affected are concerned, to be top-up payments for 1 year and not over the 4 years of the budget as we had been led to expect.
Which is also, by the way, just to note, that's a far, far cry away from Sinn Féin's original guarantee to their electorate that everyone, past and present, would be protected. Now the recommendation, and let's see how they interpret this, Eamon, now the recommendation, and it'll be interesting to see what Sinn Féin says about this, is that people, for some of their payments, will be protected for just 1 year.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, just 1 year. And they have been told over and over again that they, these protections would cover, such as they are, would cover the 4 years. And another thing which would concern me is this, that you've mentioned the payments to the victims and survivors of the Troubles, that there would be an enhanced treatment for them, if you like. And I personally think that's right and proper. But I wonder how it's going to work. Because, I mean, about one in three of people who receive DLA in the North, they do so for reasons of mental ill health, not because they are physically injured. Now, that amounts to, and it's a very big figure, 3% of the population as a whole. 3% of the population as a whole. And just to keep in mind that your mental illness has to be pretty disabling before you'll be awarded that. But the thing is that when that changes to, I know this is a wee bit complicated, to personal independence payments, the PIP payments, the scheme for introducing the PIP payments is designed to exclude many of those receiving DLA for mental health reasons. So a measure like this will hit the North harder than it hits anywhere across the water.
We'll get into some of that in a second or two. Geoffrey Peel, the other side of the coin here is that this is the most generous protection anywhere in the UK. It's the most generous benefits system anywhere in the UK. So maybe Stormont should be applauded for that.
Well, it's already generous in that it pays a lot more benefits to a greater percentage of the population currently, as Eamon alluded to. You know, you could argue that that means that we are inherently, as a population, more disabled, or you could say that there are people who are claiming some of these benefits that aren't entitled to them. But the fact is that the overall budget, the full pool of money, the pot of money that is made available to Northern Ireland is fixed, and therefore if you increase payments to one part of the budget or one part of the community, it affects others, it affects other departments. And, you know, by protecting welfare, something which other parts of the United Kingdom haven't done, it means that the frontline services are going to be affected. And you have political representatives on this programme frequently complaining about Tory cuts not affecting departmental spend, such as arts funding and education funding and so on. And yet this policy, which isn't being implemented, this high, very generous policy, which isn't being implemented elsewhere in the United Kingdom, will have a very detrimental effect on those frontline services. You know, such things as capping benefits, I think most people in the population, if surveyed, would agree that that's a good thing. It is not a good thing that we lock people into benefits, that we don't encourage them to go out and get work if they're able to get work. Or they're not able to set up their own business, for example. So we should be encouraging people. We should be focusing on creating wealth, creating jobs, creating employment, creating companies that are sustainable and create employment,
and don't
rather
forget,
than encouraging this benefits culture.
And don't forget, as we're turning this all in our minds at home, we're thinking through this at home, the reality here. The reality is that this £500 million that is being set aside to offset some of these benefit cuts, that's not magic money. So that's coming out of elsewhere in Northern Ireland. That's coming out of whatever department it is that could otherwise have got that money. So how do you feel about that? You could be thinking on the one hand, good, we're protecting the most vulnerable. You could be thinking on the other hand, you know what? Those hundreds of millions would be very well spent when you see the potholes. I can't drive anywhere now around Northern Ireland. Maybe it is the same elsewhere, but I'm noticing more and more potholes in the roads. I don't know if you are. Education, health. Look at the pressure the health services has been under over the last couple of months. Those fantastic doctors and nurses. Would the money be better off spent there? 0-30-30, 80-55-55. I do want to get into this issue pretty much now, though, Eamon McCann. What do you make of this recommendation in this report that for those people who have been injured in the Troubles, that they will have more of a chance of keeping their disability payments? Why would someone injured in the Troubles, a disability as a result of the Troubles, be any more needy than someone that's been knocked down by a bus or someone else that's disabled for any other reason? Why?
Well, I think that this is one of the factors which make Northern Ireland sort of a more deprived place sort of than anywhere else in the United Kingdom. It was mentioned a few moments ago, you know, that there's such a high percentage of people on DLA, for example, going over to PAP, they sort of in North, that some of them must be malingering. Sort of these are welfare scroungers, if you like. Well, that just shows no understanding of the reality of the situation.
No, you're misunderstanding my question, though. What I am saying, Eamon, yep. Sorry, what I'm focusing on is that this extra advantage that for those people who have a conflict-related injury, there is nothing in this report that distinguishes, for example, paramilitaries who have a conflict-related injury to the police service, to soldiers, to any other. So as I read this, at the moment, the recommendation is that a bomber, a paramilitary that disabled themselves through trying to plant a bomb, is going to be given an advantage ahead of someone who has a non-conflict-related disability. Do you not think that that will be discussed big time in this country?
Oh, I'm sure it will be discussed big time. I'm not sure that it's going to be discussed sort of in a proper and sensitive and realistic way.
Well, let's do that now.
Well, look, I mean, sort of you cannot have sort of any benefit or anything else, it seems to me, sort of going to victims, if you're then going to pick and choose as to who the victims are. You know, and you've covered it many times in your programme, that the minute you begin to talk about who's entitled to compensation or even sympathy because of what has happened to them over the course of the Troubles, the minute you begin to talk about that, some people will say, well, that should apply to such and such a category, but not to some
but
other category.
Point...
Then you're into, this is an ancient discussion, who's a victim and who's not? I mean, consider the reaction to Eames Bradley some years ago.
Yeah, but
it is an absolutely futile argument.
But this is going beyond this, and I'll read it out in just a second, right, the paragraph I'm talking about. But Geoffrey Peel, this is going beyond saying who's a victim and who's not. This recommendation is going to give, if it is supported by the politicians in Northern Ireland, it is going to give an advantage, potentially. If you take what I've set out in front of you, someone who is disabled in Northern Ireland will be at the back of a queue, relatively speaking, compared to a paramilitary who has injured themselves by planting a bomb or getting shot because they decided to try to engage in illegal activity. So the non-conflict related disabled person will be put at the back of a queue compared to a paramilitary, Geoffrey.
Well, I don't know the intricacies of this and how it's going to be implemented, because implementation is going to be a problem. I think the issue, and again, Eamon alluded to it earlier, is that a very large number of people who claim DLA are claiming it for mental related reasons. Now, if you have an individual who's claiming DLA for a mental-related issue and is also deemed to be someone who has suffered as a result of the conflict, then it could be problematic in that we continue making payments, very large numbers of payments. By the way, these payments are bizarre because you have often, and this would refute Eamon's argument that these DLA payments are always deserving, because you have instances where you have two adjoining parliamentary constituencies where there's no obvious reason why there should be much, much higher rates of claiming in one constituency versus another. And that is the case. You know, if you take Lagan Valley, for example, adjoining West Belfast, the two constituencies have markedly different levels of DLA claiming. But you could argue, well, is there a fundamental reason why people in West Belfast were affected more by the Troubles? Well, you could argue that in certain areas.
I want to read this section of the report.
As a general rule, that's unlikely to be the case.
I want to read this section of the report, Geoffrey, about this Troubles-related advantage to those people who have a conflict-related injury. Because I want to read the paragraph in full. Here it is. It reads, PIP has two components, the daily living component and the mobility component. In the assessment process, claimants will be awarded points depending on what they can and cannot do. The magic number for both components is 8 points. There is concern that this method of assessment may not fully capture the consequences for claimants in Northern Ireland of conflict-related injury. Therefore, where such claimants are judged to have no entitlement to PIP, we recommend that those scoring at least 4 points in the reassessment should be awarded an extra 4 points. They should then qualify for supplementary payments at the standard rate of whichever PIP component is most advantageous to them. The payments should be for a period of 1 year. So in other words, if you have a conflict-related injury, you are given, you need 8 points to qualify for this. The first 4 points you're given free if you have a conflict-related injury. You're given those ahead at the very start of the process. Even if you have a criminal conviction for your injury, even if you were found guilty, even if a judge in his report said it was a heinous crime, do you still get those 4 points at the very start of the process? That's what I'm asking this morning. And that's what I wonder, are the political parties, what they're going to say with this?
Well, that is going to be, a focus of discussion. Whether it should be a focus or an important focus is a separate question. I mean, we're talking here about a very small number of people. And
it's the principle.
Where there are large numbers of people, and we've just heard the old standard, you know, sort of that how is it that people in West Belfast are claiming at a far higher level than people in Lagan Valley? Well, I mean, with no disrespect whatsoever to the good people of Lagan Valley, it is to be found in the fact of economic levels, of poverty levels, but also when that intersects with sort of and overlaps with experience of the Troubles. And, you know, we talk overall about the statistics and the Troubles. Our Troubles were to, and not entirely, but to a certain extent, localised. And they were localised in the most needy communities, Catholic and Protestant, across the north. There is a long-term effect on this. I mean, people who have got post-traumatic stress disorder as a result of the Troubles tend to be, it's a fact, the doctors involved will all confirm this, PTSD suffers. It makes mental ill health more a disabling and more severe than otherwise.
What Eamon, you must hear
some
you
of
must
the
acknowledge
nature
Eamon, you must,
of Northern Ireland society, sort of, and that calls for measures which are not appropriate or necessary in other places.
But Eamon, you must acknowledge that surely there must be some people in the system who are claiming DLA who are not really eligible. Anecdotally, it is known as Derry Living Alliance.
If it's known sort of as Derry Living Alliance, I haven't heard that.
And where do you get any of the evidence from, Geoffrey? That comment, which will be offensive to some genuine claimants in Derry, where are you getting that from? Where's your evidence?
Well, of course, it's very difficult because the authorities compile the evidence as
don't make
to
a statement
who is eligible
then.
Or the authorities compile the evidence as to who is eligible or ineligible for DLA. But I think it is unquestionable that people are claiming DLA who are not eligible for it. Initially, DLA was introduced in order to support people who had profound disabilities and couldn't work or had to have the amount of work that they undertook limited. And therefore, they were highly eligible. And people who, victims in the Troubles, who were injured and maimed, of course they're eligible for it. But the question is whether a very large swathe of our population that claims DLA is. And I would say that quite a large number of claiming who shouldn't be.
Well, Evison says in her report,
seeking work or seeking employment. Evison, or seeking build a company.
This report, by the way, is a recommendation. The Stormont Astley, Eileen Everson, to draw up a report as to how to sort the benefit system here, how to spread whatever mitigation there's going to be. The report was released yesterday. That's why we're talking about it today. On the point that Geoffrey was raising, why are there this level of claimants in Northern Ireland compared to elsewhere? Everson writes in a report, first, there's the volume of working-age claimants, approximately 120,000 in Northern Ireland, in receipt of DLA. This is often remarked on and is not entirely surprising. Years of poverty and conflict are not conducive to good health. High levels of outward migration will result in a population with a disproportionate volume of disability. Here's Darren. Morning, Darren. First call of the morning.
Morning, Stephen. It's an absolute joke. I can't believe it. Only in Northern Ireland would that happen.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about the preference for paramilitaries and stuff to get DLA over anything else. Who could write this stuff? It's obviously pushed it through.
Well, now remember, and it's why we're discussing it, remember that nothing's pushed through. This is a recommendation from a report, and it's now for the politicians at Stormont to decide whether to accept it or not. So you tell them what you think about that bit of the report that we've highlighted. We're talking about all this report, but that certainly, I when I saw that, I thought, there's a talking point. There's a huge talking point, because this report does not distinguish between people of different conflict-related injuries. Darren.
Well, I never wanted to be put on DLA through no fault of my own. I had to go on. I never got on it even when I knew I had to, because I had no choice. But now I have to worry about when it gets renewed, if it gets renewed, who is going to be given it for going out and shooting somebody and a bombing going wrong or a getaway going wrong in a car crash, and they get it over me who has to go on through absolutely no fault of my own. It's an absolute joke. A joke. How are you meant to move on? How is this country meant to move on when paramilitaries and people like that, people that have done stuff against other members of the community, are given a higher standard? How are you meant to move on from that? It's a no-win situation. People's always going to be thinking about it. I go to psychology because of the PTSD as well as physical injuries. And I'm told by a psychologist, you can't move on until this is all finished. And it's never going to be finished here as far as troubles go on, because it's always being brought up. Always.
You know the counter argument, Darren. The counter argument is that there were many people. And by the way, you know, when we talk about paramilitaries, we're talking about paramilitaries on all sides, from all different communities in Northern Ireland. But Darren, the argument goes there would be quite a few people from paramilitary backgrounds who would say, but for the special situation in Northern Ireland, they would never have been drawn into criminality. Now that they're supporting peace, they have as much pain in their disability, they have as much mental health anguish as anyone else with PTSD, and therefore in a caring society, you acknowledge that and you support them. Now, it's a different argument. Let me just finish this point, though, Darren. It's a different argument saying that those people should be supported as much as anybody else with a disability, but that's not what Eileen Everson is recommending. She is recommending that those people, in other words, people with a conflict-related injury, are giving a preference, are giving an advantage over other people in the assessment process. They get 4 points. People not involved in a conflict-related injury with a disability do not. They're 4 points behind from the start.
And that's what's wrong. That's what's so wrong about it. I was brought up in staunchly loyal of Thousand Estate. I didn't once think, you know what, I'm going to go and lift a gun and shoot somebody. Or I didn't once think I'm going to go and plant a bomb. You know, see this excuse about, oh, we were forced into it. That's nonsense.
That's not
nonsense.
The point. It really isn't.
Go on, Eamon.
Well, that's the point.
For a start, I suppose every time we talk about victims and anything that's been done for them, I mean, people phone in or they bring it up in conversation. Oh, sort of this means that we're giving preference to people who brought it upon themselves. I mean, who went out to kill people and so forth. That's not what we're talking about or should be talking about here. When we talk about people who are disabled, who have got problems as a result of the conflict, overwhelmingly we are talking about people who were never in paramilitary groups, who were never sort of in the police or the army or anything else, or did anything at all. I mean, there are areas sort of in this country which bore the brunt sort of of the conflict, where the effects of it are still absolutely palpable and observable, sort of, as you go around the place. Sort of, whole families and women sort of being devastated by having lived for years just amid tension. There are people badly affected by the conflict. And if you said to them, well, what actually happened to you during the conflict, perhaps their house was never even raided. But at the same time, they lived in constant tension and fear, sort of with a sound, sort of other houses in the area being smashed into by paramilitaries or soldiers or something else, sort of never a moment's peace in their heads. And it is a long-term effect. That has to be recognised. And those are the people, overwhelmingly, 90% plus, at least, of the people that we are talking about here fall into that category. To talk now sort of about who's a victim and who's not and paramilitaries and all the rest of it is to divert attention from the enormous social need which Professor Evison, with the limited resources available to her, has tried to deal.
Amy, you're disregarding the small print. Yes, I agree, the people who weren't involved and stuff but did get tore into it, is they deserve the help. But there's that small percentage of paramilitaries that are out there that are going to get the help because it's a conflict-related injury.
Well,
where do you stand on that? You can't just rub it away.
To need the help. And you know, people talk all the time as if to get DLA, as it is at the moment, that you just sort of go into an office, ask for a form, sign it up, and they give you DLA. It is not like that at all. Most of the complaints that I am aware of and that I receive about these things are from people who can't understand and who are deeply distressed that they've been turned down.
Well, but hold on a minute.
Here's a letter from the doctor. Why am I being turned down? It's very difficult to get DLA.
But that's why this program is introducing this subject this morning at the very top of our show, because this does not just involve Geoffrey Peel, those people who do have a conflict-related injury, whether they were a paramilitary, whether they were a British soldier, whatever their background. Take people that have nothing to do with having a conflict-related injury in terms of their assessment. It's difficult enough, we hear, for them to meet the criteria. In other words, for them to get the 8 points. So how are they going to feel when they learn today that if they've been, I don't know, knocked down by a bus, a disability in their adult life that where they are in as much pain as someone in this country with a conflict-related injury, they are 4 points behind in the process from the very beginning, Geoffrey Peel. Now, is all disability not the same? Why are we giving preferential treatment to people with conflict-related injuries? There's a hierarchy of disability potentially being created by this recommendation, Geoffrey Peel.
Yeah, well, it would appear so, but I'm not Eileen Evison. You should ask her why it is. I would say it's almost certainly as a result of pressure put on messages given to Professor Evison from Sinn Féin that certain groups should be protected who are very highly claimant-focused. You know, I think that there is here an issue in terms of DLA in particular, and specifically in relation to mental health-related issues. If we got back to the core principles of DLA and the types of people who are eligible, I think that's what Professor Evison should have focused on. The fact is that this particular benefit was destined and was intended to be used for people who had profound disabilities and were not able to work or had work limited, and therefore they are clearly eligible, and people and victims, and I stress the word victims, of the Troubles who were injured, clearly are eligible. The big question mark is whether all of those people who claim DLA for mental health issues are eligible, and whether such claimants who claim to be affected by the Troubles are also eligible, and that's not being addressed by Professor Evison's recommendations.
No evidence for this whatsoever, sort of why Breath had said over and over and over again, sometimes with colourful anecdotes, I leave my house and I see for work and I see people sitting watching Jeremy Kyle, and that's sort of a nonsense. Sort of when you look at the government's own statistics, and I'm talking both sort of about Stormont and about the Department of Work and Pensions across the water, when they issue their official statements, fraud, benefit fraud generally, is at under 1%. Under 1%.
In other parts of
absolutely common and standard.
Eamon, will you deny that in other parts of the United Kingdom where these policies have been implemented in full, the volume of claimants has declined significantly? Therefore, obviously, it is clear that people who were previously DLA claimants are now back in work and probably earning an awful lot more than they would have earned with
there is a proper assessment process.
I wonder where you get that from, because there's no survey. I mean, this is
let me bring in Damien and Derry.
Discussion among social scientists
and
everybody else in politics.
Oh, Stephen.
Go ahead, Damien.
There's no evidence. No, whatever.
I can understand the discussions about today regarding the troubles in the DLA, but I'm absolutely disgusted by Jeffrey's comments about the dairy living allowance. I'm a 40-year-old man. I've been working since I was 16 years old until very recently when my son was diagnosed. Both me and my wife worked since we left school until 3 or 4 years ago when my son was diagnosed with cancer, stage 4B. Very ill. I'm now as care. I haven't been able to go back to work. If I could, nothing would give me greater satisfaction to be able to go back to work and have a normal day-to-day life. Due to the chemotherapy and radiotherapy that my son's had, he's now left with a lifelong condition that means that he needs almost round-the-clock care. To be pigeonholed as a layabout is highly insulting. In my spare time, both me and my wife and my son do our utmost to help other people in the same situations. We've raised money for different charities, and we've actually started our own charity in the Northwest to try and help families affected by cancer.
So maybe, Jeffrey Peel, you need to be very careful. This Dairy Living Alliance, you've heard the insult that it has had on someone like Damien here. Maybe you need to be careful. Maybe you need to apologise to someone like Damien.
The snobbery and the presumptuousness of some of the people in this country, in a working class country, is unbelievable.
Let's let Jeffrey reply to you, Damien.
I wasn't referring to anybody or Eamon, indeed. I've never met him and never spoken to him.
Referring
before.
To people in Derry, specifically.
All I was referring to the fact that anecdotally it is referred to as the Dairy Living Alliance.
Well, anecdotally means nothing, Jeffrey, does it? Anecdotally, because people refer to me in a lot of different ways.
Because then the main reason being that the claimant levels in Derry are astronomically high. And again,
maybe that's point. Because the people here need help. Maybe that's because the people in the Northwest have been ignored for too long. Maybe that's because whenever we look for a detox centre, that we can't get one. Where there's ones in Belfast. Where's the help for the people in the Northwest? Why is it the children from the Northwest with cancer have to travel to Belfast for treatment?
Yep.
At 3 o'clock in the morning.
Let's let Jeffrey reply.
Well, we can focus on what the government should be doing, but what I would say is the culture of Northern Ireland tends to focus on benefits rather than wealth creation. You know, we have a society which is highly dependent, a society which used to be one of the great creators of wealth and innovation and industry and the greatest shipbuilders in the world, and now we are reduced to a dependency culture depending on eking out additional public sector spending or benefit centres or advice centres or any type of centre that is paid for by the public purse. The fact is that these fiddling suggestions about...
We are dependent on an economy bubble which burst in 2008. We're dependent. The economy is dependent on consumerism.
We were one of those places that had the highest rate of property inflation in the United Kingdom.
Is it my fault that the government, that the Tory government, or bankers, or whoever else, made a balls up of the economy? Why should I, after everything that I've put under the economy, be made to suffer now?
It was a Labour government at the time, of course, in 2008, when the economy bust.